Hi, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined once again by co-host Chris Baines. How's it going today, Chris?
Hey, Scott, I'm doing good. I wish we could have given a little bit better news from the big announcement yesterday with Ainias Hawkins making his official college announcement. But it looks like UC didn't come out on the right end, and he's going to Penn State. So
King of
best of luck to
football.
Him.
He gets claimed.
Scott, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit bummed about it, just because like he was like a big time recruit. Like obviously, like he was like a 4-star recruit or whatever. Most people had him ranked pretty highly. Cincinnati was in the mix with a lot of big name schools. And, like to see that he like went to Penn State, it's like good for him, but it kind of sucks. Just it seems like UC never really lands those types of guys. But like we said, it's just kind of good in a sense of being like in on somebody that good. But at the same time, it's like, man, if you can't like land one of your like higher profile like players' sons of the last like 20 years, it is kind of a little blow.
Yeah, it was. I think what was most disappointing for me was that they came so close to landing him. You know, he made the top two. Fickle was definitely pulling out all the stops to get him to come along. Current commits, Malik Van, was constantly talking about him on Twitter. They were constantly hanging out. It seemed like, and I mean, to your point, he's a legacy. It seems like everything was in the works to make him a Bearcat. And unfortunately, when you're being enticed by a program like Penn State, with Coach James Franklin there, who's probably going to lead them on to another very good season like they had last year, in the Big Ten, in Happy Valley, in front of 100-something thousand fans. I mean, it's hard to, you know, stay home when all of those bright lights and that big time football atmosphere is staring you in the face. So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely going to be. I feel like, you know, with UC in the group of five now, I mean, a player like a Hawkins, even though he's a legacy, even though there's a lot of connections with him at Cincinnati, I still think that a guy like him is still kind of a reach. Fickle can pull out all the stops. He can probably, you know, you can obviously get him in the door and get UC close. Whether or not UC is going to actually be able to land a guy like a Hawkins on a consistent basis, I mean, that's to be determined. I mean, he hasn't coached a single game. He's done great on the recruiting trail so far, but what happens if over the next 2 years, UC only wins 5 or 6 games? Now, like we talked about last week, I mean, they might win 5 or 6 games this year, and we'll hopefully see that go to 8 or 9. But what if they just sit at 5 or 6 for the next 3 years? He's kind of an unproven commodity from a coaching perspective, aside from his one season at Ohio State. So I can kind of see where Hawkins would almost want to go to someplace a little more established and big time, like a Penn State. From a broader perspective, I don't think it's that much of a concern. They've still got an excellent class, the number one in the conference, 42nd overall. Van looks like a hell of a defensive end, potential defensive tackle someday down the road, a 4-star recruit. I'm pretty sure one of only 1 or 2 4-star recruits in the entire conference. They'll be fine. They'll be fine long-term. Fickle's got them rolling. If he proves that he can really win on the football field over the next 1 to 2 seasons, I'm sure they could land a guy like Hawkins sometime down the road.
Yeah, just because, like, looking at, like, things that Hawkins said during the whole process, like, he wasn't really considering UC until, like, Fickle took over.
Right.
So, like, just, like, having a guy who, like, Mr. Ohio, like, is what everybody called him when he was at Ohio State, and that's definitely carried over to Cincinnati. So, like, I'm looking forward to seeing, like, what he can do, and if he can, like, just start, like, making an imprint on some of these, like, big schools in Cincinnati, like a Moeller and, like, St. X, where, like, everybody goes to a Big Ten school or an SEC school. Like, it seems like Cincinnati can really never lock anybody down from those schools, which is kind of like frustrating, since like you hope like your big in-city like powerhouses like become like little feeder schools for you, instead of
Right.
like you just get preferred walk-ons from some of those.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's probably what's most encouraging about this staff and this 2018 recruiting class so far is that Fickell's doing all of this selling on a program he hasn't really defined yet. I mean, he's saying all the right things, he's creating the right mindset around the program, he's got a lot of energy, but as far as selling a winning program and selling kids on a staff that will help them win games, I mean, he can do it so far. He can tell them, but he doesn't really have any proof yet. And imagine what happens down the road if UC starts winning 9 to 10 games a season under him, like they were used to under Kelly and Jones. I got to figure those doors open up more and more doors open up locally than ever has been before, especially with those Hawkins type recruits. So at this point, you know, if a Hawkins type recruit doesn't commit, I can see it. I mean, we saw it yesterday. 2 years down the line, if UC is on the cusp of an AAC title, hey, maybe even a Power Six bowl game or a Power Five bowl game, maybe they landed a local 4 or 5 star recruit. Who knows?
Yeah, like it's gonna take winning and like getting the program like back to where like they had it, kind of in the glory days. At least more consistent, where you're winning the conference, just something that they've really kind of struggled to do with Tuberville at the helm.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, with Fickell, he's at least giving attention to those local recruits. I mean, Tuberville didn't even bother offering. I mean, I think he offered some of these kids. He basically just sent them a letter and then just walked away. I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that with local recruits. I mean, they're not going to like that. When they've got a D'Antonio or a Kelly or a Harbaugh or a Meyer sending them gift packages and sending them letters and visiting them in their house. I mean, how the hell does UC expect to compete with that if Tuberville's sending them offers through the mail and never following up? Like, they're never gonna know the love that way. Fickell's completely changed that. So I think good times are coming from a recruiting standpoint. The Hawkins miss kind of stings a little bit. It wasn't especially surprising. But it's not disastrous for this class. It's actually, I mean, the class is going to be perfectly fine without him.
Yeah, the class should be fine, but it still does. Like anytime like you make somebody's little final group, you always hope that
Yeah.
they'll find a way to come through. That again, unfortunately, just didn't really work out.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's painful. It reminds me of when Dwayne Stanford and Adolphus Washington were coming out of Taft High School. They both had UC hats on their table on signing day. But unfortunately, Stanford also had Oregon and Washington had Ohio State. And they both picked Washington and Ohio State and didn't pick up the UC hat. And I remember that day. And it's UC always gets close. But they just haven't landed that top-tier recruit. Now, things change this year with Malik Van. I mean, whether or not he actually signs is, you know, who knows? It sounds like he is going to. But if he eventually signs, I mean, that's just going to steamroll into more and more local recruits like him down the road, so long as Fickell stays for 3 or 4 years and has success here.
Except, I think another thing that fans have been kind of burned on is like some of these guys, like give like verbals, but then like their profile rises and then they go to like SEC schools,
Right.
which seemed like that was something that happened under Tuberville, at least at the beginning, where like he was in on a lot of these guys and then their profile rose and then they did not come to UC. And it seemed to tank a lot of their recruiting.
Oh yeah, Josh Norwood is a perfect example of that. Tuberville was in on him, I think, since June or July when they brought in Norwood into a camp. I think it's from Georgia. They had him committed for most of the fall. Then Ohio State, a couple of spots open up on Ohio State's roster, and all of a sudden he picked up an offer from them, and away he went to Ohio State right before signing day. I mean, one thing, I don't know if you guys have talked about this before, but the early signing day that's starting this year, that's going to be a boon for UC. I mean, they're going to be able to sign guys like a Norwood before spots open up at bigger schools, and like an Ohio State or an Oregon or a Michigan offers a UC recruit who's under the radar but primed for greatness just because he maybe doesn't go to a big school or doesn't have a whole lot of hoopla around him or is only a three-star, etc. I mean, UC has an opportunity to lock in those kids instead of seeing them get poached on National Signing Day.
Yeah, the guys who don't want to wait to commit. Because, like, if... like, some, right. Like, obviously, some of them will wait. But, like, not everyone will wait. And, like, maybe even some of, like, the high three-star guys who seem to always go late. Like, if you can get, like, two or three of those guys to sign early, that's a huge boon for the program. That just raises your floor. Which, like, I know we talked about that before. Like, if you raise, like, your floor so, like, your worst players are, like, still very talented instead of, like, walk-ons. Like, no offense to the walk-ons, but, like, there's a giant difference between, like, Ohio State's, like, middling recruits and Cincinnati's middling recruits just because, like, their bar is so high. And Cincinnati's bar is a little bit lower. If that makes sense.
Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing about recruiting. I mean, it's a numbers game. You know, schools at UC's level might be able to get a couple of four-star recruits, mostly through three-star recruits. But the reason that, you know, an Ohio State or an Alabama are constantly at the tops of everyone's rankings is because their roster is full of four- and five-star recruits. And even if they pull in, you know, a couple of guys who don't pan out and, you know, they're surpassed by three-star players over time, from a numbers standpoint, because they're pulling in 24 and five-star recruits every year, by the numbers, they're going to have a better overall team, and they're throwing those guys on special teams to get experience for being a starter on offense and defense later on down the road, and they just keep the cycle going. And that's why it's really important for a school like Cincinnati, if they are going to kind of stay in the 3 to 4 star range, to make sure that they're pulling in those types of players and not going the Tuberville route and trying to load up the roster with two-star diamonds in the roughs. Like, you're going to find a Mike Boone who was a converted two-star wide receiver who could have a 1,000-yard rushing season this year. But for the most part, by the numbers, a lot of those guys aren't going to pan out. And that's why it's really important.
Yeah, and it's like a school like Cincinnati, or even like most of the smaller schools, if they miss on, like if they're like 4 or 5 star like recruit, if they land one, like doesn't pan out, that like sets your program back a couple of years. Like it, and like for Alabama or like Ohio State, yeah, it's a disappointment, but then they can just like turn around and plug in like Joey Bosa's brother, and they're being fine. Like, there's a much larger margin for error.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is it's college coaches. I mean, I don't want to kind of pivot to baseball, but I mean, if you ever saw the movie Moneyball, when Billy Beane's talking to his scouts and he's saying, you know, you might be able to kind of talk up this kid and say he looks great and everything, but you don't know what he's going to do. You don't know how he's going to play at the major league level. You don't know what he's going to look like 5 or 10 years down the road. You don't know. And college coaches are the same way. But what makes an Alabama and Ohio State successful is that they're loading up their roster with talent across the board. And whether or not a couple of guys don't pan out, for the most part, a lot of them will. just because they're playing the numbers and getting and basically stockpiling talent as much as possible. And to your point, for a Cincinnati, right now in the group of five, they're not going to be able to do that. Maybe if they got into the AAC or ACC or Big 12, they could reach that level at some point. But, you know, to your point, if you're going to land a couple of three or high three-star, four-star kids, they got a hit. I mean, you look at like a Travis Johnson a couple of years ago. He was the, I think, like the number one tight end in the state of Florida. He was a four-star recruit. He was the number one player in UC's recruiting class. I think he was the ESPN top 150 or 300 player. He got injured his freshman year and never panned out. I mean, that was more shitty luck than lack of coaching and development. But I mean, that's just what happens sometimes. And it is what it is. But I mean, the good news is that with this staff, they're not finding diamonds in the rough. They're, to an extent, yes. Like you look at this class coming up here, like a Jason Jackson out of Chicago, lower three-star player, smaller guy, lots of speed, doesn't have a whole lot of big offers, but you know, he might pan out. He might be a good player, but they're banking on a lot of those known commodities like a Malik Van and a Josh Wiley and a Ben Bryant and a Jashon Martin and a Blake Becevic and Ty Van Fossen, like guys who have solid offers and who will probably be great, good contributors down the road. And that's what you got to look at from this staff. And that's what they're doing. And it's hopefully it pans out.
Yeah, like that's really like the hope is that like some of these guys that they're bringing in are the ones that are able to turn around the program. So you can just look to Houston and see like how quickly like Tom Herman was able to build them up, and then how kind of quickly that came just like crashing back down a little bit once he left.
Mm-hmm.
The recruiting class, even last year, definitely took a bit of a hit. And now, right, like, their class for this upcoming year doesn't, like, has a lot of three stars, but it doesn't have, like, the big standouts that he was bringing in.
Exactly. And maybe they get there again. Is it Todd Orlando? Is he their new head coach?
Yeah, Major Applewhite.
Oh, Major Applewhite. Yeah, he's just a holdover from the old staff. Yeah. Maybe it works out. Maybe they rebound. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it's a consistency of bringing in those gobs of talent every year that allows for an Alabama. I mean, having the same head coach for a bazillion years like an Alabama definitely helps. But making sure that that year over year they're bringing in that talent so there isn't a big drop-off should a coach leave is important.
And, like, hopefully that's the level we're going to start hopefully getting from, like, the Bearcats. We can all hope, at least.
Yeah, and you got to hope, like, maybe if Fickell leaves here in three years, four years, something like that, you got to hope that Mike Bone, if he's even still here, he hires a guy that has a similar kind of mindset as a Fickell. And even like a Jones or a Kelly or a D'Antonio back when they were here, younger up-and-coming coaches ready to burn the midnight oil to bring in recruits and make this the best program they can possibly make it, and just work their asses off to make UC football great, as opposed to a Tommy Tuberville who basically cashed checks and I'm not really sure what else he did here. Yell at fans, and that's about it. I mean, they're in good hands.
He wore some hats.
Some different. He did have some hats. He sniffled at press conferences. He made his best quarterback his third string quarterback and played him for a snap in the full season. I mean, he did a lot of stuff. I guess he did a lot of stuff here. None of it was good, but he did a lot of stuff.
He certainly did things.
You couldn't say he didn't do things.
let's move on to the larger story of the week that we wanted to get to. It's our official schedule, like rundown and prediction. start at the top. August 31st, 20 days away. Less than 3 weeks. Cincinnati plays Austin Peay. We don't need to go too in-depth on Austin Peay, since I don't know anything about them, and I'm not going to look anything up. what's your expectation for this game? Do you think, would you be disappointed if it was, 28-0 was the final? Or, do you just think winning is the most important thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You bring up 28-0 since last year they beat UT Martin 28-7. I feel like if UC beat Austin Peay 28-7 this year, I'd be okay with that, or 28-0, I'd be fine with that. Obviously, you want a blowout, but I mean, we know going into the season, defense is going to be the key for this team winning football games. It's definitely not going to be the offense. There's stars there, but with such an overhaul there, and with such a with the coaching staff bringing such a defensive focus to this team, there's going to be a lot of low scoring games. So I would hope that this game is like a 35-7, 28-0, at the very least. Hey, if it's 63-10, I could give a shit. That's fine. That's awesome. I'll take that. But if it's a low, if the defense is getting a lot of three and outs, if the offense can look like it can move the ball a little better than last year, they don't have any major injuries. It's a pretty comfortable win. Great. That's what I'm expecting out of that game. Pretty much your typical FCS game is what I'm kind of hoping for.
Yeah, I'm hoping for, the big blowout. He's like, you just want to start it
Blame off. High.
You just want to start it off right. But even if, if they look good, and even if they don't score a ton of points, I think that's just half the battle. It's like, with the first game last year, they looked terrible, and that game was closed for way, way too long before they turned it on, and that ended up being a bad sign for the rest of the season.
That's actually a really good point, because it's not how they finish, it's how they play. And you're right, last year it was way too close. I mean, going into this game, it's the first ever game under this coaching staff. all of those guys together is the first time ever coaching this football program. I can forgive it being close for a little while, but kind of like you, I expect it to be a little more, a little cleaner, a little more dominance. They show that they should be beating the tail off of Austin Peay. That's definitely not forgivable from what happened last year, where you're in year four under a head coach and they have no idea how to score points on an FCS team. So yeah, I'd go with you there.
So we both go 1-0 for Austin Peay.
Yep. That
brings up the big test the following week. They go to Michigan. They're going to be a significant underdog. Even just by their computers, they're a giant underdog.
Yeah, what are they, by the way?
Looks like some projections have them as a 24-point underdog. And
is that right?
What do you think would have to go right for them to beat Michigan? Or do you just think, as long as they try hard and don't get blown out too bad, it's fine?
And that's the thing is, I don't know if anyone can pragmatically say that UC is going to go into Ann Arbor and get a win. Michigan loses their entire defense pretty much to graduation/the NFL, but it's still Michigan. And it's not Brady Hoke's Michigan anymore. It's Harbaugh's Michigan. I'm sure he's looking to decimate UC when they come into town. kind of like the Austin Peay game. I kind of like it, but not really. I want them to play well. I want them to play clean football. I want them to show progress. I want them to go out there and try and make sure it's not a blowout. So for me, sort of like the Austin Peay game, the final score doesn't necessarily matter as long as it's not a complete blowout in the opposite direction.
Yeah, because Michigan, like, is kind of an interesting team. Like, they obviously, they're Michigan. Like, you know what you're getting into going to Michigan.
Right.
But at the same time, like, if you're going to have pull off an upset, like, this is, like, the pretty much the perfect time to do it. Like, you're kind of an established team yourself. Like, at least you're not like any chumps. And, like, as you mentioned, like, their defense did, like, turn over a ton. Like, obviously, they just, like, throw in a lot of very talented players. But they'll be coming off a pretty, like, big game themselves against Florida the week before. It's like, maybe you can catch them a little bit, catch them down to start the year. That's really the only major chance you have, I think, is if you catch them early and are able to, like,
yeah,
put one on them, and your defense can keep you in the game.
Yeah, and you make a good point about Florida being week one for them. I kind of wish it was flipped. It's just a shame that UC comes in after Michigan has one of their bigger out-of-conference games of the season. Because, I mean, if they open with UC, like you said, bringing in new players on defense, and they might be looking ahead to Ohio State potentially. So maybe UC pulls a quick upset. I would never put it past a Harbaugh coach team to be underprepared for any opponent, whether they be a Power Five, whether they be Cincinnati in the Group of Five or an FCS school. I think they'll come ready to play no matter what. But if the weeks were flipped, I think UC has a better chance. But with Michigan playing Florida the week one and kind of, getting their bruises out of the way, unfortunately, this could be an ugly game, and I just hope that it doesn't become a blowout and UC at least plays respectably.
Yeah, I think that's the major thing. Like, they'll probably lose, but like how they lose is really the important part. Like, they go out like playing hard, even if they lose, like that's fine. Like, if they just, like, get, like, steamrolled, like we've seen in some of the, like, bigger road games of the past, like, yeah.
Right.
Like, past, like, 5 years, ever since Brian Kelly left. Like, yeah. You can just, like, look through the archives of any big-name opponent they played. Like,
yeah, Tennessee, Ohio State, yeah. I mean, Miami, Florida, yeah.
Even the Ohio State game, kind of an interesting game. Like, they did get, like, their asses kicked the second half of that game. But, like, that one play where they said somebody was illegally downfield after UC scored, that was a pretty interesting call still.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah. The Ohio State game seems like an outlier because, I mean, that's national championship Ohio State that UC faced, you know? Yeah. You can kind of write that one off to an extent, I feel like.
Yeah.
It shouldn't make anybody feel real that much better, but, I mean, you can kind of write it off. Like, oh, okay, UC lost to the national champions.
And they gave up, like, fine. 7 million running yards that game. So it's not like they were, like, that great.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds depressing to say, oh, okay, UC's going to – we're kind of writing UC in to be 1-1 after the second week. But, man, I wish this game was, like, in year three under Fickell. Then I feel like UC would really have a chance to pull the upset. But, you know, year one, week two, et cetera, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either. It's really hard to go against the grain. Just from where we saw UC last year, where they seemed to never win on the road, to, like, playing at one of the toughest places to play in the entire country, no matter who
right.
you are. Up next, like I think the most interesting game of the season, and what could be like the turning point, like one way or the other, is when they go to Oxford to play Miami University. It's kind of like a toss-up game, at least at this point of the year. Like, Miami's given UC fits the past few years, and every time UC's gone to Oxford, I think you could say probably since like 2010, I think, yeah, they go every, or 2011, yeah. Yeah, that has to be. They go every odd year.
Really, since they started going under the Tuberville era is when they started to have fits.
Even with, like, the Butch Jones year, like, they had that one year where it was, like, where they didn't score a touchdown until the very end.
Wait, which one was that? Okay, so here we go.
It had to be 2011 when, like, K was in there.
Yeah, maybe that was it. It was 2011. Yeah, because they blew him out at home in 2010 during that horrendous first season under DeBush. But yeah, even when they had the momentum in year two, they kind of struggled.
They won 27.
But I mean, they blew him out the next season. So I don't know, outlier.
It's like they play well against them at Nipper, but going to Oxford, it seems like it's always a struggle. Like they won 2011 right. 27-0, but they scored a lot late. 2013 was 14-0. 2015 was 37-33. That was the game where Hayden Moore scored very late for them to avoid being upset by Miami. And even last year, Miami gave them a lot of fits and could have easily won that game. If that was the end of Miami's season, I think Miami would have maybe pulled that one off. But instead, mm-hmm. It was when they lost six in a row.
Yeah, and that's I mean, kind of building off of that point, this is probably Miami's best shot at turning this series around and pulling out a win over UC. I mean, they're the only team in college football to lose their first six games of the season and win their next six to go to a bowl game. They're coming off a lot of momentum with Chuck Martin as the head coach. They've got a pretty good team coming back next year. Whereas UC is completely hitting a reset button. Now they're doing it in a big way with Fickell, who's going to bring a lot of energy. I don't think we're going to have a situation where UC is going to be completely dead on the sidelines halfway through the third quarter, and they're actually going to have schemes and plays that actually change after halftime to make adjustments and counter what the opposing team's doing offensively and defensively. But, I mean, if there's any game this year for Miami to actually get up and break that streak, it's this one. Because if they don't, this streak's going to be going on for a long time.
Yeah, I really feel the same way. So I think I even said the podcast after the Miami game last year, I thought Miami would get them in the next couple of years. Obviously, the coaching staff changed.
Right.
But it just seems like where the trajectory of UC has gone, as it slipped a little bit, and Miami's starting to rise up again. Like, who knows if Miami will be able to keep it going like they did at the end of last season. Like, as you mentioned, they won six in a row. Like, once they switched, right. Quarterbacks and everything. And it's just going to be a tough game. Even though, Oxford is, mostly, UC fans, it's, I don't know, just weird to play there.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's to your point, they don't play as well on the road as they do at home. I mean, they didn't really play that much better at home under Tuberville, but historically, Oxford's given them fits. Even though that there's a lot of UC fans that head up 27 to pack that stadium, it's just something about Oxford that makes them not play as well. Or maybe that just says more about Nippert than Jaeger Stadium. But I don't know. I think UC wins. It's going to be kind of tight. It's going to be like one of those uncomfortable games we've had against Miami the last 4 years under Tuberville. But it's going to be more encouraging because there's a lot of caveats going on there from a UC side. You know, new head coach, new scheme, new system, a new offense. You know, who knows what's going to happen with the quarterbacks, new receivers, all that kind of stuff. I'm thinking more like a 24-17 win, 27-17, something around those lines.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a toss-up, pretty much. I think that they should beat Miami. And I'm looking kind of something like last year as well, where it's 27-24, 31-27, something like that. Because it's just at a weird point in the UC schedule where they play the best team they'll play all year. Then you go to your rival, which I think part of the problem has been, I don't think UC's really taken them that seriously the past few years.
Right.
And
Fickell will change that, I gotta imagine.
And then, like, the next week you start conference play at Navy. Like, it's just a weird, like, sandwich game that, like, really matters a ton. It really shapes how your season's going to go. If you get off to a good start or you get off to a bad start.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, it's the UC almost gets Miami at a similar portion that Michigan gets UC. I mean, Michigan gets to get their lumps on the road, or against Florida, and then comes home and plays a weaker opponent. UC has the same thing. Maybe that'll help them. I don't know. I feel like it's going to be one of those low-scoring games. Like you said last year, it's going to be kind of one of those, like, 24-27, 27-20, something like that. But it's not going to be, like, the eye-rolling 27-20. It's going to be like the, oh, they won a close game but played well. Let's blow them out the next two seasons, at least.
Yeah, I think that game is going to be the one where we really see where the offense is going. So right. If their offense can, like, get it together and they put in a strong performance at Miami, I think that's a good sign. If, like, their offense struggles, like, Miami's defense wasn't really great last year, even when they were winning. So, like, I think that's really what we're going to find out. Because if the offense struggles at Miami, it's going to struggle at Navy.
Oh, yeah. And that's a concerning game. So we have Miami as 2-1, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Navy, yeah, that's concerning. Navy is such a weird team. It's like, we talked about this last week, like Ken Niumatalolo, he basically plugs in whoever the hell he wants out of that school and wins 8 games a year, just basically getting out of bed. But those 4 losses that they kind of tend to average, they have weird ones over the course of the years. I mean, they lost to Army in the Army Navy game last year. They lost to Western Kentucky a few years ago. They lost to Rutgers a few years ago. Games they maybe shouldn't have lost. They lose weird games sometimes. And this is definitely one of the more difficult ones on UC's schedule. Just from Navy's, like we talked about, Navy's a good program. They've got a great team. They're never an easy win. And just that funky triple option offense UC's not prepared for. I don't remember the last time we've actually played a triple option offense. And I don't know. The good thing is that, you know, Fickell has some experience there coaching, being the defensive coordinator at Ohio State when Ohio State played Navy a few times. I think this is going to be a loss. I don't know if it's going to be a huge loss, though. This could be one of those ones where it's kind of close-ish until the second and third quarter, and then Navy's ground game just grinds them into the dirt, playing off of UC's lack of depth. I could see it being like a 30-20 loss, at 35-20, 35-28, something like that. Close-ish game, but I don't know if UC can beat them. Not this year.
Hey, going to Navy, I think, is the part where it gives me pause, like thinking Cincinnati can go there and win. It's like, as you mentioned, like Navy did lose 4 times last year. Like their losses at Air Force, at South Florida, neutral site game against Temple, and neutral site game against Army. Actually, they hosted Temple in the conference title game. Never mind.
Right.
And they lost to Louisiana Tech in their bowl game. So 4 of their 5 losses were like at neutral sites or road games. And Temple was the only game they lost at home. So, and I don't think UC's defense is as good as Temple's defense was last year.
So, right.
Because like, Navy's one of those teams, like, you have to make them throw. And that's a lot easier said than done. Because even, like, Houston last year was riding pretty high, and Navy, like, got them last year. That's Houston's first loss. So, yeah, it's just a really tough thing to, like, have only a week to prepare for, coming off a rivalry game and a game against a really good Michigan team. Like, yeah, especially,
yeah, your third road game in a row, too.
And historically,
you're probably about to say that.
UC has not historically opened conference play very strong. They've lost every conference opener.
Oh yeah, that was the mainstay of the Tuberville era. Get behind the eight ball before you go into October. Yeah, and that's the thing about Navy is that they're always going to be prepared to play. And to your point, you got to make them throw. But if it's a close game within a touchdown or two, either way, they're not going to just give up the triple option offense. I mean, they're going to ride that until the end. The problem is I don't know if UC has enough firepower to put up a few touchdowns and maintain a 3 or 4 touchdown lead that forces Navy to throw. Not this year, at least. Maybe in a couple of, maybe next year or the season after that. But I don't see them. I feel like UC is going to have the problem that they're going to fall into Navy's game. They're going to play Navy's game. It's going to be a slog them out run game both ways, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. I don't see them coming out of Annapolis with a win.
Yeah, I don't either. It's a really tough test for any team, especially early. And if like Navy. Like they had quarterback issues at the end of the year where their quarterbacks and like all their running backs, it seemed, got hurt. And
right.
It probably won't be a problem week 3.
And yeah, I mean,
and then really they'll be 2-0 just looking at their schedule. So it'll probably be a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I think we both got into the 2-2, but I mean, again, it's almost like, I think the theme for me through 2017, win or loss, show me that there's energy. Show me that they're playing a brand of football that can win once everything is established and they bring in the talented kids to run those systems. Show me that this is the staff that can make adjustments in the game and make the right calls from a personnel and play standpoint. Yes, I think this is going to be a loss, but I think if they show signs, I think it'll be encouraging. Again, it's just like the Miami-Ohio game we're talking about. As long as it's not like an eye-rolling loss, I'll be fine.
Yeah, like so much of the season, comes down to just how you play. And
yeah,
I think that's the most important thing for year one, like coach.
Right.
The next game should be a win for the Bearcats. They play Marshall. Marshall was pretty terrible last season, and they don't look to be very much improved this year. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, this one's always tricky. I hate playing Marshall. They're always so tricky. They're like the school that basically takes everybody's cast off. They're like Last Chance U, but at the FBS level where they basically let any kid in that has questionable academics and lets them play. The problem for every other team in Conference USA is that means they have a loaded roster several years in a row. I don't know what happened last year with Doc Holliday or whatever, but for the most part, under Doc Holliday, they've had a lot of good seasons. I hope they don't bounce back next year. I think you're right. I think this is probably going to be an easier game on UC's schedule, but yeah, man, I don't know. This is tricky. I think they're going to win. I think it's going to be like, again, like a 30-20 win, something like that. But yeah, I don't know. This is a tricky one.
Yeah, I think it is too. Like Marshall's not really projected to be a top tier, like Conference USA team, but like it seems like they're like picked in to be in the middle of the pack with the media predicted. Projections, but yeah, it's a kind of like an interesting team, like where they're like kind of a mismatch of characters, as you said, and it really depends on how good their defense actually is,
right?
Their defense last year was garbage, and if their defense is garbage again, like UC should pretty much stomp them.
Yeah, definitely. And it's weird. I mean, who knows if was last year under Doc Holliday, the last four years, they went 10-4, 13-1, 10-3, and then last year they went 3-9. Was last year an outlier? Was it just a down year? Did they just have a lot of bad luck? I didn't watch a single minute of Marshall football. Do they rebound this year? Do they stay kind of middling in the bottom of the Conference USA, and that's kind of Doc Holliday's telltale sign to retire finally? I don't know. I just don't know Marshall well enough. Like if you look at like down the schedule, like I know what UConn brings to the table. Like I know what's going on there. I have no idea what the hell's going on at Marshall. So, like, for me, I feel like it's kind of a scapegoat answer, but I'd have no idea. I mean, I think UC's going to win, but, I mean, who the hell knows?
Excellent commercial, like you mentioned. Like, last year, like, their first four games, they got outscored, like, the average 51-29. Just kind of crazy, because, like, they were, like, a pretty solid program. Like, they won,
right,
like, 33 games the previous 3 years, and then they were just, like, god-awful.
Yeah. Like, out of nowhere. Like, I mean, that's the thing is, maybe there were telltale signs during the 2015 season that no one saw coming other than inside the program. But from, like, a casual observer, which I definitely am, like, I have no idea.
Yeah, so, it's a kind of hard to really put a finger on Marshall.
Right.
I think, like, the good part is, like, they do play at Nippert. And if they can't, if UC can't take care of business at Nippert Stadium this year, it's going to be like a long season anyway.
Like, exactly.
Let's just be honest about that. But, like, I feel pretty good overall about, like, their chances against Marshall. They should have a nice win.
Yeah, I agree. I think it should be. I don't know if it's going to be a comfortable win, but I think they'll do enough to win. And I agree. I think it'll be one of their easier games on the schedule when it's all said and done.
But also at the same time, like, if Marshall comes out of the gate, like, pretty decent, like,
right,
yeah, maybe you could have a little bit tougher test on your hands than, like, you thought just looking at the schedule. It's like their first, they play Miami, NC State, Kent State. So, like, there's a chance they could be, like, 0-3 or 2-1 or something like that. If they come out, like, in 2-1, it kind of be interesting. But
right,
no matter what, Cincinnati should take care of a Conference USA team at home. Really, no matter who it is.
Right, exactly. And that's, I think that's almost kind of like, that's another theme for me this year. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat. I don't know how many teams are favored against this year. I got to imagine Marshall's one of them. Maybe like Tulane, East Carolina, UConn, Austin Peay definitely. Just beat those teams. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat. Don't lay any duds. Just win when you're supposed to win, and that's it.
That brings us to the next game on the schedule, which is a home game against Central Florida. I think of all teams to try to predict this year, Central Florida has got to be one of the toughest.
Like, yeah.
Last season, a complete turnaround where their defense was really amazing and their offense was kind of garbage. Well, not kind of. Their offense was pretty much garbage all year. They did finish with 6 wins and they had a big win over Cincinnati at UCF last season. So it's like kind of hard to tell. Like, it really, I think this one really depends on how much better UCF's offense is and like how much like their defense either falls off or it stays the same. Like, it just seems like it's going to be a slugfest.
Yeah. And I don't think UC's going to win this one. I think it's going to be, it's just so weird. I don't know where Scott Frost has a program going. I mean, it definitely seems like Central Florida has bottomed out and they're on the rise. I don't know how much. I don't know. I don't think UC is going to get blown out. I don't see Central Florida being like that much better than Cincinnati on both sides of the ball at this point, where it's just a complete lopsided blowout like South Florida a few years ago when they were down, 45-7 at halftime or something like that. I don't think it's going to be that kind of loss, but I think just Central Florida is where UC will be next year. And just by way of where both of those programs are, I can just see Central Florida just straight out just being better than UC that day.
Yeah, I don't think that's too far off base. Like, I kind of think Cincinnati's going to lose this game as well. Like, UCF last year was like the quintessential, like, they beat everyone they were supposed to beat, or at least not really supposed to beat, but everyone who wasn't that good, and they lost to everybody who was good. I guess, right. I guess besides their bowl game, but bowl games don't really count. So it's a good barometer check. And if UC is going to have any chance to compete in the division, they have to win this game. You can't start right. league play 0-2. Like, you just can't.
I mean, the good thing is that, I mean, I don't think their goal this season should be to compete in the division. I mean, yeah, that'd be great. But, yeah, I mean, I think make it respectable again. I mean, like, again, like all the losses this year, don't get blown out. I mean, UC can probably pull the upset. I mean, do you think there's any doubt that UC could win at home in this game?
I think they could pull it off. I think it really depends on how far, like, the offense comes along. If, like, they're still facing the same quarterback issues they faced in the middle of October last year,
right.
I think they're going to be in trouble because, like, UCF still has a ton of defensive talent. But, like, if they're starting to pull things together, like, I think it's a game that they could win. It just seems like I don't know. It's, like, hard to buy in, I think, too much to, like, go overly optimistic just after, like, what we saw from the offense last year, especially mm-hmm. against a pretty similar UCF team. Like, I think it's definitely, like, there to win. But I kind of think UCF is going to be good this year. So I'm leaning towards a loss.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not that, like, Central Florida is leagues better than Cincinnati. It's just that they're a little further along in their rebuild than UC is. Again, I mean, this is going to be halfway through the season. Who really knows what Fickell's going to be or where this program is going to be? Maybe there's more talent on the roster and Fickell would be able to turn it around a lot faster than that, but just the pragmatist in me just says that it'll probably be a loss. UC could probably win, but they're probably going to lose.
Yeah, not to go like too like high of minds, but I feel the same way. Like I think UCF's going to win like 7 or 8 games, and like this is going to be one of them. Like I think it's just. I don't know. It's more that I believe in UCF and, like, I believe in UCF, like, more than I think Cincinnati's going to do.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's – it says really more about what Scott Frost is doing than what Fickell's doing because it's just way too early to kind of pass judgment on Fickell right now. He's doing all the things well. We just don't know what they're going to get from a coaching perspective. And on paper, Central Florida just looks better than Cincinnati at this point. So, yeah, I'm at 3-4 so far through the UCF game. But it could be 4-3 again. I mean, it could be 4-3. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And I think the good thing is, like, it seems like a lot of wins are going to come in the back half of the schedule. Like, after the bye week, they host SMU. Like, SMU, another team that has come along since UC played them last. Like, when UC last played SMU was one of the worst teams I think we've ever seen. Like, they were garbage. And now, like, they're a lot better. They have, like, undisputable NFL talent on their team. But they do come into Nippert, and if UC can't take care of SMU at Nippert, like they have a lot bigger problems, especially after a bye week where like you know what SMU is going to do. They're going to spread you out and like throw mm-hmm. all over the place. And that just seems like the type of game UC has to win. If like they're going to make a bowl game, they have to beat SMU.
Like, yeah, exactly, game. Exactly. No, go ahead.
No, that was the end of my point.
That's a good point. I mean, I think the important part about the game is you're exactly right. That's a game you have to win. That's like, at that point in the schedule, if we're thinking UC is going to be about 3-4, 4-3, to really write your road to a bowl game, you have to beat SMU. And I mean, SMU's not the dumpster fire they were a few years ago. Let's be clear about that. Chad Morris has corrected some of the issues that June Jones brought to the program, but I mean, they're not really, I don't know, they're not there yet. Maybe they'll get there. I don't know. I mean, they beat a Houston team last year by a couple of touchdowns, but they also lost to Navy at the end of the year, 75-31. I mean, who the hell knows what you're going to get out of them? I don't know. I'm not sure where they're at, but that's definitely a game that, you know, UC should be able to win if we're actually going to pick the games right now.
Yeah, SMU was a lot better at home than on the road, as you mentioned. Like, they stomped Houston at home. And, like, most of their big losses were on the road, outside of the Memphis game where they just got destroyed. Like, it seems like they're just, like, a step away still. Like, maybe
right.
They make that big leap, and, like, this is, like, the year for Chad Morris. But it just seems like they're maybe, like, a year or two, a year away from, like, really breaking through in the West.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of it depends on...
And that's the thing, this...
Go ahead. I think a lot of it depends on, like, just where Chad Morris has the team going. Like, obviously, like, June Jones left him in, a dumpster fire. He's really, like, turned that program around, and he's already a hot name in coaching. And, like, they did have a chance last year to make a bowl game. Like, they were somehow 5-5 going into their last two games. And they had a chance to knock off USF, and they got destroyed by Navy. But, like, it's definitely a program on the rise. But it just seems like it's good fortune for UC that they get him at home this year.
Yeah, and you were going to say exactly what I was going to say. It really just depends on where Chad Morris has them going. Are they going to flatline? Well, maybe they will flatline. Are they going to plateau? Are they going to continue to make improvements throughout the season? I mean, this is going to be a game that's midway through October. We should have a pretty good idea of how Chad Morris is doing in rebuilding SMU long-term at that point. From their schedule, I mean, they have a pretty easy schedule coming up to Cincinnati. They do play at TCU and at Houston, but they've got SF Austin. I can't remember. I don't know where that would be. It's an FCS school somewhere in Texas. North Texas, Arkansas State, and UConn. I mean, they could very well be 4-2 or 5-1 heading into the UC game, or they can be like a 3-3. I mean, you don't really know what's going to go on with them. If they're like more a 5-1, I'd be worried. If they're 3-3, this should be a game that UC should win.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it really just depends on where they're coming from. If they play Houston
right
before they play Cincinnati, I think that's a pretty key game for SMU.
Yeah,
it would really tell us if they're challengers or if they're just still on their way up.
Exactly. So.
And that's
so. Go ahead.
And like, it's a beginning of a pretty killer stretch for SMU. They play Houston, Cincinnati, Tulsa, UCF, Navy, and Memphis, with four of those on the road. So it would go a long way to seeing if they would make a bowl as well.
Right. Right, exactly. For now, I would probably say that's a win. And then UC's sitting here at like 4-4.
Yeah, we're on the same page there.
Sorry, did I say 4-4? Wait, where did I miss that one?
You'd be
1-2.
4-3.
Oh, 4-3, yeah, 4-3. And then there's South Florida. And that's gonna be a nightmare.
Yeah, the projected like best team in the league by everybody who voted in the media poll. Like, they play a garbage schedule this year. Like, kind of unfortunately for them, but I guess good for them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a place where it seems like UC rarely plays well. Like, they've had some big wins at South Florida, but I don't know, that's just going to be a tough place to play this year, and they'll definitely be undefeated by the time they play UC, so they should have a lot to play for, and it's just going to be a challenge to go there.
Yeah, at that point, they should pretty much be playing for the G5 Bowl, whatever you call it, P5 Inclusion Bowl, or Access Bowl, whatever. It's going to be, I mean, with the new coaching staff, I feel like I have a little bit more hope as far as UC going in there and pulling an upset. But again, the pragmatic guy in me, I don't know if they can win that one. I mean, Charlie Strong is a great head coach. He had challenges at Texas, but he proved he can be a solid coach at Louisville. It's going to be a different scheme and system that they're used to compared to what Willie Taggart had, but it's still South Florida loaded with talent in this conference. I mean, this is their conference to lose. And unfortunately, UC has them on a schedule on the road this year. So I've got this as a loss, with UC dropping to 4-5 as a result. Or, sorry, 4-4 as a result. God, I can't get that straight.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's just like a step too much to take, to think they'll win at, on the road at South Florida. Like, South Florida's beaten them the last two seasons as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be it's a tough game, as long as they have, like, Quentin Flowers back there. Like, their offense is going to be really good. It's right. Not that they just lost to South Florida the last 2 years. They've been blown out the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the gap between them and USF has really been accented. At least it was under the Tuberville era.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The one thing that gives me pause is the fact that those blowouts were under a different coaching staff. But that doesn't make South Florida any less talented. It's going to be, if Fickell shows through the first seven games that he's completely turned around this program and the rebuild is going to be a lot less painless than we thought it was going to be, sure, I'd have confidence in UC going down there and pulling out an upset. But right now, on paper, I think they come out of this 4-4.
Yeah, I do too. I don't know, South Florida should be really good. And even though, like, they did lose Taggart, it's not like they replaced him with nobody. They have Charlie Strong.
Exactly. So you have him as 4-4 coming out of this one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tulane, though.
A tricky game against Tulane. Tulane was kind of feisty at times last season, even though they finished 4-8. Like, they also run the option. And, I don't know, that's a kind of a weird team. Like, UC should dominate them. Like, Tulane shouldn't be very good. But, like, those option good teams, like, Willie Fritz is a good coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, and kind of to your point, it's like they're so gimmicky with that offense. And it's, I mean, the good news is that they're going to have tape from the Navy game to watch to show the players what to do and what not to do against the triple option. It's on the road, albeit in Tulane's high school stadium. But this is one where they should win. I mean, this is just another one of those games on the schedule that they should out-talent Tulane. They should beat them something like 24-17, 27-20, 27-24, something like that. They should just out-talent Tulane. So I have this one as a win. I have this as a win moving up to 5-4.
Yeah, I do too. Like, I think it's going to be 5-4, but with the potential to be tricky. Because Tulane was a very young team last year. They could be interesting. I don't know. I just don't like the option teams. That's like one of those where, like, they definitely should out-talent Tulane. But, like, all it takes is to get, like, caught up in that fuss and, like, all of a sudden you're in trouble.
Exactly. I mean, it could be the Navy game where it completely snowballs one way or the other. But for now, I just feel like it could be just a close, solid win and nothing more than that. So I had them at 5-4 coming out of that one. Tulane just never, I'm not afraid of Tulane. I don't care about Tulane. I don't know. I feel like when you're talking about running jokes in the conference, Tulane is constantly the one that comes up, or UConn.
It's always UConn first.
Right. Exactly.
It's only like another like interesting little program that like that made a seems like they made a good hire. And
Yeah.
like we'll see where they end up going. Next, the Bearcats play Temple, which like speaking of teams, like who knows like how good Temple is gonna be. It's like
Right.
just like take a guess and maybe we'll find out. But this one I think is just a straight up coin flip at this point in time. It's like really hard
Yeah.
to peg Temple without knowing like how they're gonna look under their new coach and losing so many of like their big name players.
And that's the thing is like you said, it's a giant unknown. I mean, Matt Rhule got them to continued the solid effort that Al Golden did, or not Al Golden, whoever the hell's at Boston College now, building a program based on defense and solid run game and not the sexiest of offenses. I mean, they couldn't pass the ball for shit, but I mean, they were always a solid program. I mean, they were the definition of solid and consistency, even more so than like a Navy was. I don't know what their new staff can bring. I don't. It sounds like they kind of had another okay hire. I mean, it wasn't like flashiest hire. It sounds like the guy they brought in was essentially just someone who could just keep doing the same thing that every successful coach at Temple recently has done before. I don't know what that means for what they're going to do next season. I mean, this is another one where it's like it's so late in the year that you're going to find out a lot about Temple way before UC plays them in November. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I have this as a toss-up. I could see this being. This is like you're talking about. Like this, the schedule starts to really lighten up at the end of the year. Tulane, Temple, then East Carolina and UConn. This is where UC will either be finished as like a 6-6 team or like an 8-4 team. Right now, I have them as a 5-4 team. I think just to hedge my bet, I'll say that they'll lose this game, and drop to 5-5. But I could see them winning. That's why I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I don't want to just agree with you the whole time, but I also don't think they're gonna go 8-4. So I'll say that they lose to Temple. It's like
Like if
Temple.
we're,
Yeah, go ahead.
go ahead. No, go ahead. I talk too much.
Like Temple does have like still has like some offensive firepower. Like Armstead last year was really good. And everybody thought their other running back, who I'm like blanking on his name completely, Thomas. Like everybody, like when Thomas got hurt, it'd be like, oh, how's their offense gonna do? Then Armstead was really great. And then like at the, I don't know, it's just kind of like hard to have like watched Temple close last season, even with like some of the pieces they're missing, and
Right.
expect them to fall off like that much. Just like by the end of the year, they were a wrecking machine. Like they pretty much destroyed like every single team they played like after they lost to Memphis. And like UC plays them so late in the year, and maybe Temple's competing for a conference title. So it's gonna be a tough one. But then at the same time, if like Temple is like kind of like sputters into Cincinnati, like you have another like toss-up game that you should be able to win. If like you're on the right path, this could be the type of game that you take down.
And that's a good point. I mean, when we were talking about it earlier, I mean, neither of us have them at 8-4. If we're agreeing that they're 5-4 going into the Tulane game, and we have to pick a couple of losses down the road, your best bet is to pick Temple, just from the way that program is set up and the way they've hired in the past and the types of coaches they've hired and the type of coach they just hired. But to your point, also, I mean, if they win this game, maybe this is the pivotal point in the rebuild where we say, oh, they're going to be fine under Fickell. They can win 8, 9, 10 games a season with the talent and coaching staff they have. If they lose, I wouldn't be as concerned. I mean, I wouldn't say like, oh, they're the same old UC for the last 4 years. But if they win the game, I mean, maybe that's a moment where we say that, yeah, Fickell can bring success back to this program. As of now, I have it as a loss, but I could see them winning. I'll still say 5-5 though after this game.
Yeah, I will too. Because like I think by that point, like Temple's like offensive issues, if they have any, should be like figured out. Like don't know who their quarterback is by then, and like their defense, we'll know what their defense is for sure by then. But it's really hard to project their defense falling too far, even though they did like lose NFL talent. Like Reddick was really good, and like their linebacker was like really good too. I'm forgetting
his name. He had Matisavich, like Malavajic. Oh, I can't remember his name. Started with an M.
Medicavich, but right? Something like that.
Medicavich, that was it. Yeah. So,
and it's really like hard to like. We don't really know a lot about like Jeff Collins besides he was what like Florida's defensive coordinator. So it's really hard to get like a real feel on how good he is. But I don't know. It's just gonna be a tough game, and like in part like we're both like wary of going way too optimistic and picking UC to win 8 games.
Right.
Like, if you think...
Like, I'd rather be conservative than be surprised. Let's just say that.
But I think this does show, like, if the turnaround is real, like, you couldn't win, like, maybe 8-9 games this season easily. Like, if they take care of their home slate, like, I don't think there's any reason why they couldn't win, like, 8 or 9 games for sure.
Right.
The next game they play is they go to East Carolina, a program that's really fallen off the last few seasons. This should be a win for Cincinnati. I'm not buying the East Carolina turnaround at all.
Yeah, I'm in the same way. I mean, East Carolina is East Carolina. I just don't trust them until like they're guilty until proven innocent. I don't believe that they're a better team than UC, even though UC's hit the reset button on their program, especially because this is going to be a mid-November game. This staff will be 10 games into their careers at UC. I think they'll have things figured out where they can beat ECU fairly easily. Not easily, but just like they're gonna know how to beat ECU, and they're gonna know what they have. So.
I think so too. Like it'll be probably a tight game, but I don't know. It just seems like that ECU is just on the downswing with their program right now.
And right.
This is like the type of team that you should beat. And like it may be like UC won't beat them by like 30, but they should be able to have enough talent and have enough to go to East Carolina and pull out a win.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I mean,
the
only team they really looked good against, like, the second half of the year was East Carolina, which I think says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is if this team beat East Carolina with just talent and zero coaching, imagine what they do with actually competent coaches. And basically a very similar roster.
And it's just hard to look at how East Carolina went like last season and expect them to be like a ton better.
Right.
That brings us
to UConn. I knew you were going to say it that way. Yeah. Rinse repeat with ECU is my thought there.
Yeah, last year's shocking loss aside, like they should beat UConn. Like they should really never lose to UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Like any time they lose to UConn, there should be some sort of like investigation to like what's happening.
And right.
Whatever coach like loses to UConn should be fired.
And lo and behold, the last one that lost to UConn was fired. Well, not fired, but you know, he was forcibly asked to resign. Let's just put it that way. I feel like if UConn still had Diaco and Diaco had proven that there was a turnaround coming and he proved it next season. I mean, this is the last game of the year. If UConn had eventually been like a six or seven win team at that point, I would be a little worried. But because they went back to the Edsel well, and he's going to essentially be hitting the reset button, I feel more confident with UC's new staff than UConn's, especially at home, and especially that late in the year. Because, I mean, all else equal, which is essentially the rosters, I think UC just out-talents UConn just like they do East Carolina. So, that, I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's their seventh win of the season. They secure a bowl bid, and we all go, I don't know, where the hell, Birmingham or something, St. Petersburg, wherever the hell the AAC has their bowl games nowadays. And that's what we're looking forward to.
I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
It's like
did you agree with me the whole way? This is weird.
We did. We agreed, like, the whole schedule.
It's weird because it's like these are all of these games are essentially going to be win-loss, except for the last four. It doesn't really work like that. Usually we disagree on, like, at least three or four games. This is strange. I don't know how I feel about this.
But I don't think any of them really stand out as, like, games where, like, you think they would just definitely win or definitely lose.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I guess, like, if you wanted to, like, flip any of them, like, you would, like, maybe flip, like, Miami and Temple.
Yeah.
But even then, like, you still would end up, like, 5-7.
Unless, exactly.
Unless, like, you just think don't think they'll win a road game all year. But I don't know. It's pretty tough to, I think, end up anyway besides like 7-5.
And or like at that point six. In the year, yeah, 7-5, 6-6. Like if we say that okay, they lose to East Carolina on the road or lose to Tulane on the road, even if they lose to Temple, they're still 6-6 with a UConn win. And like kind of like we talked about last week, I think a bowl game is a realistic expectation for this team against this schedule, just the way it lays out. Anything beyond that is gravy, so 7-8 wins, great. I don't think they're going to win 8. They might. It all just kind of depends on, like we talked about earlier, that Temple game. We'll see. I'm optimistic. I think it'll be, it's overall, this is going to be one of those seasons where we have to kind of take our lumps and some of the games are going to be frustrating, probably like Michigan, probably Navy, probably South Florida. But this is where the building blocks of championships are set. Seasons like these. I mean, we had to do it in 2010 when Butch Jones was here for the first time and they won 4 games. But then they won, you know, co-Big East championships the next 2 years and they look good. It is what it is. This is what a rebuilding year is going to look like. And if it looks like a 6-6, 7-5 year where they go to a bowl game, I'm fine with that.
Except it's not like you can see the other side either, where like they struggle through some of these games and end up under 500. It's just like,
right,
kind of like a coin toss schedule, and especially with like half of the conference games, it's like how do you really know what Central Florida's offense is going to be? Like we really don't know how Temple is going to look come November. Even like a team like East Carolina, maybe like they start to get their shit together. It's kind of just hard to figure out these things.
Exactly.
Especially in a league that's like as volatile as this. Because like I know like when we picked the schedule last year, I think we did pick them over 500, but we thought there was a chance the bottom could fall out. And it ended up falling out. It fell out to kind of a much larger extent than like we imagined.
Way fell out. Yeah.
Like, so I don't think we thought they would lose to, like, UConn or, like, UCF. But, like, we knew the possibilities were there for them to lose some of those games. And we even talked about it, like, this year. Like, Miami, like, who knows about that one? That's a toss-up. Like, SMU could be a toss-up. Temple is a toss-up. So, like, I don't know. It's, like, just a really interesting year where, like, anything could really happen, and it doesn't seem like much of it would be surprising, unless, like, they go undefeated or winless.
Right. Which, I don't think they're going to go winless. I think they're going to be right in the middle. I would, like, I have them at 6-6, 7-5, probably, 8-4, probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised. So.
That definitely seems like the rotating four is there, especially if they progress as the season goes along.
Right.
But do you have anything else to touch on before we wrap up this podcast?
Nope, I think I'm good. Not sure if we're going to be back next week, not sure what we're going to talk about, but yeah, like you said, 20 days away, and really looking forward to the season to start. It cannot get here fast enough.